Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike Dottaglia along with Charlie Long, and on our Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line from Babcock Hoops, NBA draft analyst Matt Babcock. Matt, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. How are you doing today?
No, I'm doing great. I'm out here in Chicago at the Combine, and a lot of action out here.
I hear you. Matt, Charlie and I were talking about this, but I think the intrigue certainly, you know, with Houston and how they got that number one pick. Yeah, listen, when you go buy a Powerball ticket, you don't have a 1.8% chance to win. I'm going to be honest with you. It's a lot less than that, and so you can win it with that little number. But the intrigue for me is San Antonio with the second and the 14th overall pick and what that could happen and sort of trigger off maybe dominoes, because we know one thing with Giannis. It's not a question of if he gets traded. It's wherever he goes to, a three-team trade possibility there, and we've heard so much about Houston and quite possibly San Antonio. But San Antonio here has really set themselves up pretty well. You have, what, back-to-back rookie of the years on your team, and now you get the second and the 14th pick in the draft.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, they're in a great spot, and you know, San Antonio continues to strike gold in the draft lottery, which is interesting for sure. And yeah, I think the big question, you know, initially was, you know, Dylan Harper, who's the projected, you know, second prospect in this draft prior to the lottery, does he fit with what they have in place? You know, they just traded for De'Aaron Fox. They've got Stephon Castle, who is, you know, more of an on-ball guard as well. But, you know, I saw some stuff released today that there has been, you know, some leaks that the Spurs would take Dylan Harper if they do keep that second pick. But, you know, with a star like Giannis potentially on the market, you know, all things will be on the table for sure.
There's no doubt with Cooper Flagg, he's going to be the number one pick. So I'll get your comments on him. We've had so many people that have watched college basketball and have seen him. Mark Cook, a good friend of mine, and he's a scout now for the NBA. And Mark was like, man, I was like, this guy's – I went watch a game, and he was like playing in a team for Maine. He was like, you know, how the hell does that happen? You don't have a lot of guys from Maine out there. But your thoughts on the impact – that Cooper Flagg could make in the NBA. And it is an adjustment because you play in so many more games and the travel and everything else. But, boy, he sure looks like the real deal.
Oh, no, he sure is. And, you know, I've watched him for years. I, you know, even though I'm an NBA draft analyst, I watched the kids in high school, the top ones. And he's awesome. He's as good as advertised. You know, and the thing I like about him the most, obviously he's got talent, but, like, this kid plays hard every single second of every single possession. And that's a skill. It's an underrated skill.
Correct.
And so, very versatile on both sides of the ball. I mean, he's capable of defending everybody on the floor. You know, in his game, even though it offensively is not flashy, aside from his dunks, poster and dunks, really just effective. And it just, you know, again, it goes with his motor and his hard work and athleticism. And, you know, keep in mind, you know, even though he was very effective at Duke this year, he was supposed to be a senior in high school. I mean, we're talking about a young kid that's probably just scratching the surface of what he's going to become. You know, just having that foresight, let's say 5 years from now, I personally think the kid is going to be an absolute star and obviously a complete home run for Dallas.
Matt, a lot of people down here were very disappointed with the Pelicans dropping from 4 to 7 in the draft lottery, the second worst spot they could have ended up with. But this is a good draft class. Like, it's not like last year's draft where it just wasn't very top-loaded. Or, I mean, the Pelicans were able to find Yves Missi at the 21st overall pick last year, and he was a very productive rookie. And that's one thing. Joe Dumars, who took over for David Griffin this offseason after he was moved on from the Pelicans front office, had talked about having two bigs and going more towards size in the future of the NBA, kind of referencing Cleveland and OKC and some other teams that employ those two big lineups. And Missi was a really good find for the Pelicans last year, but I don't think it's out of the question that they add another big this year. So the first one I wanted to throw at you, someone that we've talked about in the pre-draft process, dating back to really the NCAA tournament, because he was very impressive then, was Maryland's Derek Queen, the power forward, kind of 6'11" big that the Pelicans could potentially bring in with the 7th overall pick if he's there. I want to get your thoughts on him and if he's going to be there around 7.
Yeah, no, I mean, I definitely think he would probably be in the conversation if he were there. I updated my mock draft yesterday, and I actually have him going the number 6 to Washington. But yeah, a very, very good player. Sort of like a modern version of Al Jefferson, where he's got the, you know, big body, not the most athletic kid, very skilled, even more skilled than Al Jefferson. This kid could handle it. He shoots it from outside a little bit. Kind of a guy you kind of plug him in a lot of different places, because I think he could play the 4 or the 5. Another big man that I think would be interesting for them is Kaman Malawach from Duke, who is just a giant. I mean, 7'1", huge wingspan, shot blocker, rim runner, but also showing promise to shoot it. Both very, very interesting if they are there.
What are your thoughts, Matt, on the rookie campaign of Yves Mise? It was so funny that before the season started, I mean, everybody thought he'd be somewhat of a spot player. But we had on with this Jen Hale, who covers the NBA and the Pelicans for a long time. And she mentioned, she was the first one to say it, hey, he's going to see a lot more playing time than we might think. And they really believe he's going to have a pretty strong impact in his rookie season. It's exactly what happened. So give us your thoughts on what you've seen from Yves Mise and what a potential for him down the road is really unlimited.
No, sure. Yeah. I mean, he's a very impressive guy and player. And he is further ahead at this point than I thought he would be. But yeah, very, very good, very athletic, high motor. I think he does have room for growth offensively of adding to his game. I mean, seems like a guy that will probably be in New Orleans for a long, long time.
You brought up Malawach, and that was a great one to bring up, Matt. It just feels like he is going to be the prototypical, like, rim-protecting, rim-running big. But there's another Duke prospect, and, man, that Duke team was talented because we've already talked about Cooper Flagg and Malawach.
How did you lose at the end?
Con Knipple is someone that I'm really intrigued by. I don't know where he's going to go. He's going to be a top-10 pick in all likelihood, but I think his range starts at 5, and he could potentially be there at 7 if the Pelicans want him. I know he's another wing, and the Pelicans kind of have a glut of wings. But your thoughts on Con Knipple, because I think he's maybe being underappreciated by some draft analysts as, like, I see people say that he's unathletic, and I just don't know what they're talking about. Just look at how he plays. I think he's a really good athlete. He's got good size, 6'7", 220. He goes into the paint at will. I really like Knipple as a prospect. It just feels like a safe player that's going to have a long NBA career.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think the first thought is, you know, he doesn't look, you know, at first glance, he doesn't look like an athlete. He's actually pretty athletic. And I talked to some Duke people before the season. They do some kind of testing, like athletic testing. And I forget the name of it, but there's some terminology, and it's sort of award of like their most athletic guy that tests across the board the best. He was their most athletic guy. And that's saying a lot for probably, you know, the best recruiting class in the country. And, I think with Con, I mean, I've got mixed feelings on him. I really like him. He is much more of a high level complementary player, off ball shooter, very smart. I don't see an offense ever being run through him. I don't see them, you know, being a whole lot of opportunities for him to create his own shot and things like that, which limits upside. But there is safety, as you mentioned, with him. I do think he will be a very good player for a long, long time. I think it's just a matter of, like, you know, who is there. You know, what is the direction you're going in? You know, in most cases, when there's a flip at the top, there's also a big turnover with the roster as well. And so I updated my mock draft yesterday, as I mentioned. I have them taking Jeremiah Fears. And the thought process there was not that he fits perfectly. It's with the idea that, okay, he's an 18-year-old kid who's got a ton of upside, and this team's probably going to go through some turnover. So, but, you know, time will tell. I mean, doing a mock draft during the draft combine, it's tough because there's a lot of moving parts and a lot of questions to still be answered here.
Matt, and so many, you know, kind of one and done players, so now it becomes sort of fit and maturity and how quickly they can adjust to the NBA game. But just from eye tests, it's been a couple guys maybe that you think will get drafted higher than maybe some people are projecting?
You know, I mean, it's a great question. This is not a direct answer to your question, but I do think it is relevant on some level or another. It's today and then the live games, Tahad Pettiford, freshman from Auburn, he was off the hook, and he's a guy that we've all been kind of keeping a pulse on. Does he stay in the draft? Does he go back to school? He's got a very uncertain draft range. After today, I think myself and probably most of the NBA are probably thinking he's going to be in the draft and be a first-round pick. So kind of an indirect answer, but I would say Tahad Pettiford.
Looking at, everyone talks about Dylan Harper and the NBA bloodlines with Ron Harper, but there's another guy in the top 10 maybe is show picks, definitely in the lottery, with Jace Richardson from Michigan State, the son of Jason Richardson, who spent 14 years in the NBA. So, it's kind of the same thing that people will talk about with Dylan Harper, the advantage of being around the NBA your entire life, or at least early on in your life and knowing what to expect. But it's kind of similar with Jace. I just want to get your thoughts on him because he's another really athletic guard from Michigan State that I think will go into the top 10 picks.
Yeah, no, with Jace, he's so much further along than I thought he would be this year. I mean, he did a great job. He played for an old school great coach in Izzo, who's very demanding. So being a true freshman that could step in and earn his trust and play such a big role on a really great team, I mean, it's just, hats off to him. And I think I kind of see him from two different angles. One, the productivity, his feel for the game, his shot making. He's clearly a winner type of kid. The issue is he's very small for his style of play, and he's actually smaller than I even thought he was. He measured poorly on Monday, came in at 6'1", and for being a pretty much primarily off-ball guard, I do think that's going to hurt him, which I hate saying because I'm rooting for the kid. But being a 6'1 off-ball guard, that is a tough pill to swallow from an NBA lens.
Matt, I won't hold you to this, but I'm going to ask you anyway. Where do you think Giannis ends up when this is all said and done?
Oh, man, just so you know, my dad's been with the Milwaukee Bucks front office for 28 years.
Okay, I can almost throw that one out.
he was a part of the front office that drafted Giannis. And so, business is business, and, we'll see how it unfolds. I'll just say this. I'll be rooting for Giannis, whether he's in Milwaukee or not.
That's a great line. Thank you, Matt. We didn't know that, but there's always a connection. Hey, I remember growing up, Luol Cinda back then, and then he became Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, and he started with the Bucks. I remember they won a championship with Oscar Robertson. But then, I need to go somewhere else. And that team out west was pretty inviting back then.
No, sure.
Yeah, Matt, before we let you run, I mean, we've talked a lot about these prospects because the top four picks kind of seem a little bit set in stone, at least the top four prospects, whichever order that they go in with the 3-4 Ace Bailey and VJ Edgecombe. But then from that 5 to like 10 range, it's just kind of a jumble. And we've mentioned a lot of names. The one that we haven't yet, as I'm sure you know, Texas guard Trey Johnson, who just can fill it up. A very advanced scorer for his age. But then, I watch him play and I wonder exactly what kind of role is he going to have in the NBA. And I want to get your thoughts on him because I've seen some sites have him listed as high as the 5th best prospect on their boards. And obviously he's got the advanced scoring to kind of back that up.
No, sure. And I know Trey very well. I actually have him at number 5 going to Utah. And, Trey is labeled as a shooter scorer. I mean, that's what he hangs his hat on. And, very, very valuable skill set. I mean, putting the ball in the hole is what teams are trying to do, right? And he does it on a very high level. Doing research on him, these teams are going to learn that he's an alpha dog, crazy gym rat, and that's a recipe for success. And so I do think he'll go very high, and I don't think he's limited just to being a shooter either. Really good feel for the game, and he's just tough. And so I do think he will be, in that mid to high lottery range.
Matt, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. Man, you learn something every day. See that? We didn't know this about your dad, but glad you got us informed on that. Thanks so much for joining us. Great insights, buddy. Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot. Keep in touch.
Thanks,
Matt. All righty, Matt Babcock, who's NBA draft analyst for Babcock Hoops, and his dad, part of the front office of the Milwaukee Bucks. And you talk about being in the wind tunnel of the vortex. Giannis has put him in that spot, and, man, they need to recoup picks. A lot of those picks now, they own by the Pelicans.
I said this a couple weeks ago, Mike, but as soon as Damian Lillard tore his Achilles, that was it for Giannis in the Milwaukee situation, because they tried to go on with Dame Lillard. It didn't work out, but now he's 35 years old coming off a torn Achilles. There's no There's no way that Milwaukee can really sell to Giannis that they can compete next year with what they have. So it's going to be, and the issue with blowing it up is that, as you mentioned, the Pelicans have control of their picks. They can't really blow it up unless they get involved in a three-team deal with the Pelicans and move some things around so that they can get their picks back. But maybe the Pelicans could get something spicy out of that, too. We'll have to see.
Yeah, and this is where Joe Dumars becomes the – he's got to be the queen piece in chess.
Yep.
He's got to be able to make those right maneuvers.